You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Gold Hawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Gold Hawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Now, on Zoomer Radio, Gold Hawk Fights Back. Here is Dale Gold Hawk.
Well, it's all about Uber today. We're going to give you an opportunity to debate Uber at 11:30 this morning while the councilors and the taxi industry and the Uber reps are doing that right now down at City Hall. But before that, I'd like to talk about some pretty important numbers. And may I say that for a country that's so young, we've got some numbers that are on the old side, if you don't mind the expression old. Here's what I'm talking about. For the first time in Canada's history, there are more people age 65 and older than children under the age of 15. That's what Statistics Canada is telling us. I have in the studio Susan Ng. She's Executive Vice President of CARP, here to share this news with me. Is this cause for... I mean, we knew this was coming. It had to happen, Susan, sooner or later, right?
You know what? This is the kind of number that statisticians look at and then tell us about for no purpose whatsoever. Right? So here we are talking about it because we got to make some news out of this, right?
Well, because it proves our numbers are still growing. That's what it proves, doesn't it?
Well, yes, it does. Yeah. But, and I guess the big thing for all of us in public policy is so what, right? Mm-hmm. The so what of it is why is it interesting? Right? Because somehow there's a huge distinction between two sets of human beings, those over 65 and those under 15. And yes, it used to be that at age 65, you went from being productive to being unproductive. I mean,
supposedly,
that's the prejudice,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Present company excluded, of course.
Certainly hope so.
So I guess that's the first point.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? Is it a useful piece of prejudice? Well, no. In fact, it does give us the occasion to talk about the fact that people over the age of 60, people today are working and buzzing past that sort of dividing line, working or doing whatever it was that they were doing. They become eligible for public pensions. Mm-hmm. They become eligible for workplace pensions. That's an important point. But beyond that, what is the point of making this particular statistic so public? Well, I guess it feeds into the narrative that we're an aging population and woe is us, we will not be able to carry all of these unproductive seniors with the diminishing number of younger working people.
Ah, yes, the gray tsunami we've heard so much about, right?
Of course,
yeah.
Don't forget that.
Yeah, don't.
And so what happens then is then people stop looking to see whether or not this is a group of people that are actually very productive. In the United States, they just put out some stats that the amount of income taxes paid by people over the age of 65 actually is greater than the amount of income taxes paid by the 18 to 25 crowd. So what does that tell you?
We're still working.
No, we're overtaxed. That's what it says.
Oh, I see. We're overtaxed. Okay. Well, that too.
Yeah.
That too. And, you know, we're not done because StatsCan goes on to project that, say, by 20. So it's
20 years from now.
One in six right now. Yep. Over the age of 65, will go to one in five by 2024.
Right. And the point was that those over 65 would be double those under 15. Think of the difference now. We're now about 0.1% more by numbers is going to be double in 20 years. What does that tell us?
Well, it tells me that we're a force to be reckoned with.
Exactly. And in terms of policymakers, they need to understand that this is a group of people that are coming through the mill who happen to have the following characteristics. One, they're living longer, they're living healthier. They are actively and get more actively engaged in the political system as they get older. The things that they care about start to affect them, whether it be health care, whether keeping their jobs, fighting off ageism. Those are things that are going to be front and center for them when they weren't before. So now you mesh those two things, political clout plus issues that matter to them more now than they ever did before. And what do you have? You have a formula for political change.
And that political change, we can see that happening here, there, and everywhere, particularly with the election campaign.
Exactly.
The leaders of the parties are paying attention to this demographic and are offering commitments and promises that are important to us as a group.
Precisely, precisely. Now, whereas some people are running around saying, oh, seniors have to be part of this election, in fact, they already are. You know, you look at the
yeah,
list.
Exactly.
You know, my team back at the office is chasing, running around, chasing all the pieces of information and promises that have been made on our advocacy priorities in order to put them onto one chart so that we can keep track of them all. So it isn't mm-hmm. as if we have been ignored. Not that at all. Rather, that they actually have been accumulating and focusing on the issues that are front and center, whether it be pension security, mm-hmm. access to drugs, access to home care, all of those issues, income inequality. Those are issues that are part and parcel of the things that CARP members care about and other older Canadians care about.
Maybe there are a considerable number of those out there who fit this demographic over 65, say, who really don't recognize and appreciate their own strength as a group.
Ah, yeah, that's true. And I think that that's the parties who want to keep to the status quo will try to keep everybody sort of slightly loose and unconnected, which is why we spend our time collecting people together.
Putting them together,
making sure that our members at least have a chance to hear about all of the promises made directed at them and unpack them to say, you know, there's a difference between the parties. We've also collaborated with over 50 seniors groups across the country under the rubric of Seniors Vote. And so yeah. I think I've told you about already in the past, but it bears reminding that we have started to roll out to our chapters and to our members these door hangers that mm-hmm. you hang on the outside of your own door
yeah.
that says, I'm a CARP member. Talk to me about the things I care about, not what you came here to talk about.
Excellent. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And the other thing that we're doing is something called Get Out the Vote, yeah. obviously. But what we mean by that is to ask our members and all those who, you know, work with us to find two or three non-voters in their circle. Everybody mm-hmm. knows them. Everybody has them. Get them out to vote.
Although having said that, as an age group, we're pretty good in the voting department. We vote proportionately more than most other age groups.
That's why we're not trying to get them out to vote. We're getting them to get other people out to vote.
Yeah. Hey, you youngster over here.
Exactly.
You 35-year-old, you 40-year-old, come and vote.
Well, some good news. My niece, who's away at school, and that's a category, by the way, where, you know, you start to leak some voting eligibility. You know, mm-hmm. you're not sure where you're supposed to vote. And she's determined to be voting back at home when she comes home for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Right? And so a lot of families, thank goodness, the advance polls are right over Thanksgiving weekend. So this year is a good year in which people can, you know, gather their families, get them out voting during the weekend. The other thing is that Elections Canada actually allows you to vote right now.
Yeah.
You know, and so people should get out there and do that if they think they're going to be traveling or otherwise during the voting days.
There aren't many excuses for not voting, and I'm thinking that if some of us Zoomers manage to persuade some younger potential voters to vote, once you get into the habit and you realize that it's both a right and a responsibility to do these things, get plugged in, be part of it, they might even continue.
Absolutely. Once
thought.
You get the habit, it's hard
yeah.
to break.
Yeah, exactly.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.
Goldhawk Fights Back on Zoomer Radio. Here is Dale Goldhawk.
Well, fighting back, something I'm fond of doing and something that Susan Eng, who is the executive vice president of CARP, pretty fond of doing as well. When we talk about the election campaign, as we were on this milestone Statistics Canada announcement about those above 65 outnumbering those at age 15 and below, in that election campaign, one of the things right out in front, I think, is the whole campaign for the Ontario Retirement Pension Plan. don't you think, because of the way Stephen Harper has injected himself in this by saying he'll do anything he can to try and kibosh the Ontario going ahead with its own plan?
Yeah, you know, that one is easy for us as advocates to read. But, you know, the general public out there has got to be confused because you have 80% of them saying, look, we need more help saving for our own retirement. Let's increase the CPP. Kathleen Wynne in Ontario, for 40% of their population, practically says, okay, for you, I'm going to give you a CPP-like product. Mm-hmm. So everybody's happy with that. And so along comes the federal government to say, well, we dislike that so much, a democratically elected premier doing what she was elected to do, that we're going to stymie you. We're not going to let you use your own taxpayer-funded payroll deduction system to actually facilitate this pension plan that everybody wants. Mm-hmm. And so people out there scratching their heads and saying, well, was it a good thing or not? You know, they're not going to get into the details with us. They're going to say, well, is it a good thing or not? We just finish, you know, election and talking about how good it is and the need for people to look after their own retirement. But what? Right? So nobody really understands what's going on.
No, I think you're right. And yet the attacks against the notion of an ORP, a retirement plan in Ontario, continue. You know all about the survey done by the Canadian Manufacturer and Exporters, talking about small manufacturers. They say that a retirement plan in Ontario will reduce wages or lay off staff by nearly half of those small manufacturers. They're saying half of the manufacturers will either lay off staff or reduce wages.
Well, let's talk about what they're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, the dollar amounts involved, it's the top up on your Canada pension contributions, right? That's really what we're talking about, that small, minuscule amount of money more per month that you're paying on top of your CPP contributions that both employees and employers will pay.
Right.
And it amounts to about, they said the maximum was about $1,000 a year.
$1,074.
Yeah, $1,074 a year. Uh-huh. Right? A year. And that is going to make the difference between hiring that employee or not. Now, you know, besides the ridiculousness of that claim, they made the same points when the CPP was increased in the late 90s, because when they first put in the CPP, they underpriced it just to get it passed.
Yes.
And then they had to right the ship and put in the right amount of contribution to pay for the benefits people are now getting. And they almost doubled the rates. In fact, they doubled the rates, and the same hue and cry was raised. We would lose jobs, the economy would falter, etc. Nothing of the sort happened. And indeed, in that case, they didn't even get increased benefits. They were just paying for the benefits they were going to get.
Yeah, exactly. But and remember, the worker pays, under this plan, the retirement plan in Ontario, the worker pays half of that as well. But wouldn't you think if you're that close to the line as a small manufacturer, you're worried about per head $1,000 at the very most, depending upon your salary, right? Mm. At the very most, that you're either going to reduce staff or go out of business or somehow have some kind of financial trouble. I mean, does that make sense?
It makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, in the world of pension contributions, right, for employers who are being honest with us and themselves, many major employers would prefer to make pension contributions rather than pay straight salaries. So the same $100 that you make in pension contributions is actually worth more to the employee because it goes in as a deduction tax-free into a fund that grows while you're doing something else.
Right.
That's what's the importance of a large, well-run pension plan. So the same $100 in your jeans might get spent on a weekend out, but in the pension plan, it grows to look after your retirement. So that's really the hope and the premise of pension contributions. So most employers would say, okay, I can't afford both. I'm going to give your compensation with a pension contribution instead. Many do that. In negotiations, there is that set off, you know, current salary versus pension contribution. But we are facing both a labor shortage and a lack of jobs at this point. People, it's not fluid. And so if you're in an industry where you need to keep good people, you're going to have to really consider how you compensate them and whether or not you really are going to reduce their wages in order to fund this modest contribution to their pension. Yeah.
Here's Mike on the line in Kitchener. Mike, what are your thoughts about this?
My whole thought about the plan is it's just as bad as the one the federal government has, where you know, you can put in money your whole life starting at 15 years old. And if you die when you're 64, you don't get anything. At least if I had been putting the money in my own plan, my wife would be able to get the money, or one of my children would get the money. But in this case, the government gets to keep it.
Well, first of all, it's not the government that gets to keep it.
The fund
keeps it. And that is true. It's a no-frills type of plan, which doesn't have, you know, a death benefit, if you will, in that regard. And it means that they can afford to make sure that other people who do make it through to age 65, and by the way, CPP you can get at age 60, can afford to do that. But the amount that you're paying in is about 20% of the total payments that come out. You should recognize that as well. So the money that you're out by doing it this way is a small proportion of what actually would be your pension
because
retirement.
Because the money grew over the years.
Yeah, exactly. And so you do lose that small amount. Now, that small amount, if you invested it yourself and did exceedingly well, yes, your family would be able to keep it. But most people are not quite that successful in their financial investment, and the amounts involved are not enough to grow a complete pension.
Well, that way, Susan, then you have to take into account the fact that CPP has, in fact, performed quite well.
Well, exactly. It's doing 18%, whereas most people's private investments have not done quite as well.
Yeah. Mike?
The other point is, like, I'm almost 65. I'm going to be 65 in November.
Yeah.
But I've been collecting my pension since I was 60, my CPP.
Right.
And I've been paying into it. And I, luckily, yesterday I got a letter from the government, you know, thanking me for still paying my taxes. And since I've paid almost $7,000 last year, I think it was, I'm going to get $9.95 extra on my pension check now every month.
Well,
and it makes you wonder, like, I could have put that money in a tax-free savings account instead.
Yeah.
I probably would have made more than $9.95 a day interest on it. I mean, $9.95 a month.
But couldn't you have elected not to continue to pay?
Not if I'm working, no. I tried that already.
You tried?
Yeah.
Well,
I said, I don't want to pay it. I'll just stay with my pension that I'm getting. He said, no, if you're working, you have to pay it.
No, after 65, it's optional.
After 65...
No,
yeah.
It is. I can guarantee you it is.
Yeah. After 65 is optional, and if you do pay it, then your employer must pay it.
Yeah. Yeah.
After 65.
But that's after 65.
You're younger than 65.
I didn't want to pay it, and they told me I didn't have.
Yeah,
it.
But you're under 65.
But Mike, we understand your difficulties with CPP. But then what are you thinking, not for you, but for those younger than you, that having a few more bucks into a CPP-like pension, how could that be a bad idea for workers?
Well, it's a bad idea. If you die anywhere between 17 and 64, you get nothing. That's my whole point.
Yeah, no, I understand that point, Mike.
Out of it.
Yeah.
If they made it so you got a quarter of it and it would go into your surviving spouses or children's fund.
Yeah.
There are pension plans. There are private pension plans that have that kind of payout. Mm-hmm. But the amount that you contribute during your working lifetime is closer to 18%. And so it's a lot more that you pay into to get the kind of benefits that include a survivor benefit and an early payout.
Mm-hmm.
But every private pension plan, at least you have something. If you die before you're 65, it does get passed on to somebody else.
Yes, that's my point. But you pay
regardless
more.
Of how much you make
but
on
you're
it.
Paying more Mike, thanks. I think that we're ever going to convince Mike of that. But the point is, every plan has its own particular ways of paying out and performing in the marketplace. And as you say, the CPP is a basic plan, and the retirement plan in Ontario adds to that basic plan. Doesn't mean you can't be saving money elsewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
And in fact, prudent people, as they can afford it, will be doing exactly that,
and
right?
And they should, because actually, even with the ORPP, people are not necessarily going to have completely sufficient income replacement on retirement.
Even so, that's right. If you're depending entirely on your old age check and your CPP and an enhancement through on the Ontario plan as a basis, you're still not getting enough money to really live the kind of life you might think you want to in your later years.
Yeah, you won't be maintaining your standard of living.
Yeah, exactly so. Exactly so. But the members, when you poll CARP members about the retirement plan in Ontario, you get overwhelming support, do you not?
Yes, we do. And part of the reason is that over the last several years, many of them already are collecting their pensions. They understand mm-hmm. how it works. Furthermore, as they see it, they see that what they got may or may not have been enough if they'd done this or that, if they hadn't paid off their homes and so on. They see their kids not saving the same way.
Yeah.
They see that kids definitely don't have a workplace pension. And they realize that in order for the future generation to do at least as adequately as they're going to be needing some help. And so they support it, even though they themselves are never going to benefit from it.
Well, I kind of like the altruistic nature of that. It's CARP members, it's Zoomers saying, okay, we're at an age where this is going to mean very little to us, but look at the people coming up in the ranks, the pre-Zoomers out there.
Exactly.
And we think we're in a position to campaign to help them.
Well, exactly
like
so.
It. Okay. Well, thanks, Susan, very much for coming in to mark this milestone. I couldn't imagine marking the milestone with anybody but you.
Well, thank you for that. Me neither.
Susan Heng is the Executive Vice President of CARP. On the day when there are now in Canada more people over the age 65 and over than 15 and under.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.